Production support for Noon Edition comes from Smithville. Fiber internet, streaming TV, home security, and automation in southern Indiana. More information at smithville.com. From the Milton Metz Studio and the Radio TV building at Indiana University, welcome to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Salzberg, along with co-host, WFIU education reporter Jeannie Lindsay. Many Hoosiers agree that teachers in Indiana aren't paid enough, but that agreement ends when it comes to finding a solution. Indiana lawmakers are looking at teacher pay in the 2019 legislative session and have proposed a variety of resolutions to tackle the problem. Such plans range from installing a minimum wage for teachers to increasing incentives for teachers who take on additional responsibilities, such as mentoring junior colleagues. We're going to talk about those issues and more today in regard to teacher pay. We have four guests with us. Three are going to join us in the first half of the program. Two are going to stick around, and we're going to have another guest, a fourth guest, during the second half. So in the studio, we have Rachel Hathaway, Indiana Program Manager with Teach Plus, Dan Holub, the Executive Director of the Indiana State Teachers Association, and joining us by phone from Indianapolis is Bob Boehning, State Representative for Indiana House District 91, which is in Indianapolis. He's the chair of the House Education Committee. If you want to join us on the program, please give us a call at 812-855-0811 or toll-free from around the state, 1-877-285-9348. You can also email us, news@indianapublicmedia.org. You can even follow us on Twitter at Noon Edition. So welcome to everybody. Jeannie, good to have you here.
Thank you. I'm super excited to be here.
All right. And thanks to all our guests for joining us today. It's a big issue in the state houses here. Indiana teachers pay, we're told it's behind. What's the evidence of that? What can you point to that says that's true? Dan, do you want to start?
I think there's a number of indicators to look at. If you look at the statistics, we've dropped dramatically in terms of the actual dollars that go into the salaries for our teachers. Our state ranking has dropped dramatically in the last number of years. You know, the Stand for Children recently came out with a report that indicates that since 2000, we've dropped 15% in terms of pay for teachers. We're ranked 35th in the nation now in teacher pay. You can cut that different ways. You can adjust it for inflation and so forth, but the trends are the same. We're seeing real declines over the recent years in teacher compensation in Indiana.
So both Dan and Rachel Hathaway, who's here in the studio too, what are the reasons for that? Rachel, you want to go first? I mean, why do you think Indiana has fallen behind?
So I think that's an interesting question. It's got, I think, a lot of factors to it, right? And I'm not going to claim to be like a financial analyst by any means to know some of the history, but I will say that perception from our teachers is definitely, we in 2009 went to the Indiana General Assembly really funding education, and then property tax caps were then put on that form of funding. And so that limited districts the ability to really increase their funding outside of doing referenda kind of processes. And so I think in some ways that's a contributing factor. I think the 2018 recession, or 2008, sorry, I don't want to speak that into an existence. We thought that wasn't a thing. 2008 recession also was a contributor just across the country. And I think we have been trying to make our way back from that since that time.
Mm-hmm. Representative Bob Boehning, you've seen it from the legislative perspective. I mean, how would you characterize this decrease in positioning for Indiana teachers?
Well, there's a number of factors obviously play into teacher salaries, and the state appropriates money historically, as Rachel said. Money would generally come from property taxes and could also be used for salaries. However, prior to caps being put in place, the state would still do a school funding formula. And in our school funding formula, we would actually cap what schools could use for operating expenses So it really was a way of kind of putting some equality on it. And then, so I don't see that as being as big a factor. I think if you, and Dan referenced the Stanford Children Report, I think the one thing that's pretty eye-opening to me on that report is the fact that there's been a pretty significant flip in terms of the amount that went into the classroom historically and then the amount that's being spent on administration now. The numbers have almost flipped exactly. So I think there's a lot of factors, including cost as schools. If you look at the state's demographic map and look at how many counties are actually losing population and how the population centers seem to be centering around, you know, major metropolitan areas, that has an impact. So there's a number of things, I think, that play into it, as well as the recession and things like that. But it is a priority for us to try to figure out ways to better serve and meet the needs of teachers and get more money into the classroom.
Before I let Jeannie take over, she's got a few questions, I know. I want to ask Dan about that idea that there's been this switch from money going to teachers to money going to administrators.
Yeah, so clearly we're an outlier when compared to other states. When you look at the percentage of school employees that actually teach, it's much lower than other states. When you look at the amount of money that actually goes into the classroom, that's lower than other states. We really don't know exactly why that is. I think it's a combination of things that are affecting that. But it is something that we need to look at as a state and to do everything we can to prioritize the spending on the classroom.
Mm-hmm. And I'll say, I think like the one bill that is in around 1003 right now, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
It's the reality being that some of this we just don't have like a clear picture. And so some of it's data reporting and how are we ensuring that we have the right data to be able to answer those questions. And so I really commend the House Republicans for moving on legislation that'll help to answer and provide that data. While also being mindful of the local context of funneling the dollars toward education and not just to the operations side. So limiting or being mindful of those where the dollars are going.
So, you know, it's a complex problem, so you can't just point to one single thing as the cause of it. I would point out, though, that in terms of our rankings, the states in the recession that occurred in 08, 09 took very different approaches to how they dealt with education. Many states imposed freezes. You know, we imposed some real cuts. And while other states when they came out of the recession, were investing more, we, you know, kind of didn't keep up with their surrounding states. And one statistic I'd like to share, when you adjust for inflation, the per student funding in 2009 was $14,600 per student, and in 15-16 it was down to $12,477. So we've seen real drops when you adjust for inflation in the amount of money being spent per student in Indiana. And so we just never came out of the recession with the kind of steam in terms of funding schools that we've seen in other states.
Mm-hmm. I think part of that, too, may be Indiana is ranked number one or two in the country right now in manufacturing jobs. So when you have an economy that goes south, manufacturing generally gets hurt most significantly and tends to be the slowest to come out of it. So state revenues had impact as well during that period of time.
One thing I'd like to talk about, you know, in the teacher pay conversations, teacher career ladders, I mean, the profession of teaching, you know, has been partnered with this conversation. And Representative Boehning, I know that you've been working on legislation and, you know, both of you here have been involved in, you know, advancing the profession of teachers. So I would just like for us to talk maybe a little bit about how that fits into the teacher pay conversation and why it's important to, you know, address that along with teacher wages and compensation.
I can jump in on that. So both Bob and Dan have referred to the report that Teach Plus also put out with Stanford Children around the kind of recommendations that teachers want pay, right? They want increased pay. I've got one teacher, Shelby. She's down in Evansville. She's got a master's degree, but she still has to work two jobs to make ends meet. Like, that's a reality. That shouldn't be the case when you have the degrees that another profession has, right? But it's not just about pay. It's also about how do we really support the profession and raise the respect of being a teacher. So it's continued development in the classroom so that you don't have to make that choice of, if I want to continue to be a professional or make more money, I have to become an administrator. We have another teacher, Lauren, who she's up in Goshen schools. And Goshen has a program called Teacher Advancement Program, TAP, that sets forth these promotional opportunities where instead of just being like a regular classroom teacher, you can become a mentor teacher, you can become a master teacher, and take on additional responsibilities that a lot of teachers will take on no matter what, but they're actually compensated and built into the structure of the school culture. And so it's seeing that, hey, I'm going to be grown as a leader, but still have the opportunity to stay in the classroom and making impact. So that's a big piece is, hey, I want to continue to be developed. It's a natural assumption in all other careers, and so it's really being mindful, how do we build that into the teaching profession going forward? And then the other piece, just setting them up for success, right? Like, teacher preparation is, you have to have a solid foundation if you're going to be successful in the classroom. And so often we hear from our teachers that, or folks that we've talked to through, like, focus groups or whatnot, is that they left the classroom because they were unprepared for the realities of what it looked like to deal with managing, you know, 25 second graders, or having to deal with the trauma that students are bringing in with them to the classroom as well, in addition to, like, the academics. And so for us, it's really looking at, this isn't just about pay, it's about raising up the caliber of where we're at in the state of Indiana and across our nation, because really this is a conversation that's far-reaching. So pay, leadership, ongoing development, and preparation. Sorry, I just dominated there, but I was like, no, let problem. Me just share.
That's all right.
I mean,
you did a great job.
I agree. I mean, this whole issue, compensation and career ladders, is really about attracting and retaining quality teachers for the state of Indiana. And so we need to be thinking forward about how to modernize our pay systems. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just talking to my mother the other day, and she was a teacher in Iowa years ago, and she was paid less than her male counterparts. That was the pay system back then. Civil service reform came in, corrected that problem. Those pay systems existed for many, many years. We find today that those systems don't work given the challenges that teachers face in the classroom, so we need to look forward, and this is a way to do that.
Representative Boehning, how would your bill address this?
Of course, my bill was a collaborative effort between Dan and Teach Plus, so ISTA and Teach Plus. It actually puts into law a pilot where we would fund up to 30 schools geographically diverse. We put $5 million on the line for schools to create models like TAP or like Opportunity Culture. NEA, National Education Association, has one, or we leave the universe open because we can't possibly define everything that's out there. But they're all focused on creating true career ladders, having teachers have the ability to take on additional responsibility, and with that additional responsibility and leadership comes additional compensation. And the other focus is really trying to focus on moving student performance forward as well. And that's one of the key components that TAP focuses on, is not just creating a career ladder. It also has a fairly intense rubric that informs instruction and really moves student performances forward as well. So there's a lot of positives with any one of those different options. But National Conference of State Legislatures has an international study group that I serve on. And as we looked around the world, career ladders is one of the key components that higher performing countries have embedded in their teaching structure. And in Singapore, for instance, a master teacher makes as much as a principal. And as Rachel said, I think it's critical that we start thinking more about compensating teachers more, especially master teachers, as they take on those additional responsibilities, as opposed to having them decide they want to leave the teaching field and go into administration.
All right. If you want to join our program today, we're talking about teacher pay and a lot of things that have to do with sort of increasing the awareness of the job of educators and teachers. 812-855-0811 here in Bloomington or 1-877-285-9348. Our email address is news@indianapublicmedia.org if you want to send in a question. And our Twitter address, if you want to follow us on Twitter and send us a note, is @NoonEdition. Jeannie?
So I kind of want to dive back into talking about wages specifically. I mean, obviously, Republicans control the General Assembly. The governor is a Republican, but there have been Democrats that have proposed legislation, you know, teacher wages, the minimum at a certain amount, you know, trying to get money directly from the state to educators. But the proposals that have been, you know, making progress aren't quite at that level. And so, Representative Boehning, I wanted to talk to you maybe just a little bit about the approach of getting money actually to the hands of teachers and how the legislative action that's been going on so far would do that and you know, areas maybe of compromise with some of these Democrat ideas that some people, you know, have you know, really liked as, you know, getting money directly to teachers?
Well, I think the thing you have to understand, first off, Indiana, as in most states, dollars are sent to the local communities, to local school boards and the superintendents, and they decide how to spend those dollars. So I don't think that there's very few people who want the state legislature to serve as a school board for all these schools. And there's a lot of decisions that go into play when you're talking about developing dollars to the classroom. So when you say that you want to establish a minimum base for it, that's really difficult to ascertain when you look at the fact that you may be in a school, for instance, Indianapolis Public Schools may decide that they would like to have, and the teachers, as they collectively come together to bargain over their contract, may say, I'll take a little bit less money on my base salary if we can have a paraprofessional in the room, which obviously takes money away from what would go into a teacher's base salary. So a lot of those decisions are made at a local level, and the unions, as they come to the table, there's decisions that they can have in terms of that. And I think that one of the things about 1003, House Bill 1003, that Rachel brought forth earlier, is that we really are still struggling to figure out exactly where we are. You know, when you look at average teacher salaries, you're talking about average across all age groups, and we really need, and we've been working with NEA and with ISTA to try to figure out, get a better grasp on what that data is, and that's one of the components of 1003, as well as trying to provide more clarity to the bargaining units, to the public, to everybody as to what exactly is out there to be spent. The state appropriates about $7.1 billion annually for our K-12 schools, and we just want to make sure that 85% of that gets spent in a classroom setting. If we were able to move just 3% from the, and get everybody to 85%, and everybody's not at 85% today based on our estimates, teachers would receive a 5% salary increase across the state, depending on the school district they're in. But that's a significant amount of money when you figure 3% of $7.1 million. So, the other thing that I don't think we should discount, too, is an action that the governor has taken, which is not embedded in 1003. The governor has put together, is in the process of putting together a commission to study how we can drive more money to the classroom, how can we maybe be more efficient. He's actually called upon the former CFO of Anthem. His name is Mike Smith, happens to be a person I've actually had some discussion about teacher salaries a couple of months ago before this ever happened. And I think that we need to have that dialogue to see where we could spend money more efficiently, how we can make sure that that money does get in the hands of teachers instead of diverted in other different many different directions.
Representative and the other two panelists, so I had the opportunity to talk to Governor Holcomb about a week ago about this, and he did He talked at length about the need to look at this in the short term and the long term. So it sounds like the commission would take a look at it in the long term. But, you know, what are the ways, Dan, I'll ask you, what are the ways that you hope that it's addressed in the short term in this session?
Well, I think the good news is that both political parties are talking about this as a problem that needs to be solved. And so there's some disagreements over about how to solve it and how much needs to be done this session versus future sessions. We think now is a good time to invest heavily. We're concerned that the next biennium, the economy may not be as strong as it is today. So if not now, when? I guess is the question we would ask all legislators in this state. We know that to get us back up to the medium teacher salary in the region here, we're talking between $600 and $700 million. That's a pretty big price tag. We understand that. We don't expect to get there completely in this biennium, but we'd like to see real progress. I'd also like to comment on the governor's proposal to take some reserve money, state reserve money, and invest it in the pension, which would free up some money for schools. We think that's really smart public policy. We support it, and we're encouraged to have a governor who's willing to think out of the box and do things differently and to find creative solutions.
Representative Boehning, we're about at the end of our first half of the program, so I just want to give you the opportunity to weigh in with anything that you haven't said yet that you'd like to make sure that our audience hears from you.
I really want to just kind of echo what Rachel and Dan have said. This has really been a collaborative effort. I reached out, Representative Houston reached out to INSTA in the summer. We recognize this as a problem and something that we really wanted to focus on. I really have appreciated working with everybody. There have been a lot of collaborative efforts put into this, and I think together we're going to be much more successful than if we decide to take different corners and fight against each other. I think we recognize the problem. We can come together and find solutions. So I'm pleased that we can continue to focus on what's best interest of children and by that getting teachers more money.
Thank you very much. We had a state representative, Bob Boehning, from the Indiana House District 91, which is in Indianapolis. He joined us for the first half of the program. We appreciate your being here. You're listening to Noon Edition. We'll be back for the second half of our program in just a minute.
From the Milton Met Studio at IU's Radio TV building, this is Noon Edition on WFIU. Production support comes from Smithville, online at smithville.com. WFIU News covers South Central Indiana and the state throughout the day at WFIUnews.org and on Twitter at WFIU News. You can watch unfiltered video of breaking stories on Facebook Live, and you can get a digest of all the day's top stories delivered to your inbox each afternoon. It's a free and easy way to stay on top of the headlines, plus the in-depth audio, video, and print news stories you can't get anywhere else. Subscribe right now at WFIUnews.org.
Welcome back to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Salzberg, along with Jeannie Lindsay, the Indiana Public Broadcasting and WFIU education reporter. We're talking about teacher pay and just how to elevate the profession of teaching in Indiana. We have three guests with us. Two are in the studio. Rachel Hathaway is the Indiana Program Manager with Teach Plus. Dan Holub is the Executive Director of the Indiana State Teachers Association. And joining us by phone for the second half of the program is Tanya Paff, State Representative for Indiana House District 43. She's a Democrat from Terre Haute and a member of the House Education Committee. She's also a math teacher at Terre Haute North Vigo High School. If you have questions or comments, give us a call at 812-855-0811 or 1-877-285-9348. You can also email us, news@indianapublicmedia.org. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Noon Edition. Tanya Paff, I want to welcome you to the program.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. We're going to get right to the phone, so we're going to break you in that way, I guess. So Sarah's on the line.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, Sarah's on the line, and she wants to talk about lack of support for teachers. Sarah, go ahead.
Hi, this is Sarah calling. I work at a school, and if my understanding is correct, a certain percentage of a teacher's pay is based on class performance. And, you know, we talk about foreign countries, say Singapore was mentioned, and I know a lot of people from Asia. And for one thing, there is a more uniform support for the school and teachers as an institution from the community, whereas in the United States, that is very, well, it's convoluted. There are some very supportive parents, but teachers here in the United States face a lot of antagonism from parents if they say, hey, your kid is not doing well, or I needed to correct your kid doing this. And therefore, there are a lot of factors beyond the control, such as home environment. And sometimes the teacher gets penalized in pay because the kid doesn't perform well. And it's beyond the teacher's control. The teacher's given every opportunity to succeed and has tried. And yet the teacher gets penalized in their pay. And I just think that that's a little unfair, and that if we look at Asian countries, there's a lot more discipline in the homes and a lot more support from the community for the teachers. So sorry if it's kind of a weird question, but that's the best way I can put it.
Well, we'll get some reaction from our panel. Let's go to Representative Paff first.
Well, so I've been teaching 25 years, and I completely agree with her. My part of my salary is tied to how well my students perform on, let's just say, the ISTEP math test. And I personally think it's completely ridiculous. I mean, look, the children have changed. I've been teaching 25 years, and students are so different than they were. So many more distractions, so many social issues. There's just a lot going on. And we have not, as teachers, as our profession, been treated very professionally and we've had a lot of lack of support. So this whole concept of tying our pay to the performance of our students is just ridiculous. And that's one of the reasons I actually decided to run.
All right. Either of you want to comment on this? Dan?
Well, obviously that approach concerns us. We want to do things in the state that improve the quality of our teaching, and there's different approaches to that. Indiana has chosen this model, and you know, we question it. I did want to talk a little bit about parents and public support, though, for teachers and compensation and school funding. And ISTA did a public survey last fall, just to get a sense of where people are at in the state, and it's overwhelming support. 72% of Hoosiers believe that teachers are paid too little. 70% of the state believes that we need to increase funding for schools, and it crosses. It's a bipartisan support that we see. So, the people of the state are there. They want the legislature to act, and now really is the time to do that.
All right. Thank you very much for the call, Sarah. Rachel, do you want to?
I'm completely in the sense of the level of community support. I feel like schools need to be hubs. They need to be the place where, like, the community can come together. And I think when we think about the pay, the leadership, and the prep piece, it's really going to be if we can invest dollars in those programs and making sure that we have those high-quality teachers who are seen they and are able to meet the needs of their students and all of the extra baggage that they bring along with them in our modern world, right, to just be ready to meet their students where they need to meet them. So for me, it's coming back to how do we continue to develop those teachers well, get them the resources and skills that they need to be successful, while also garnering the support from parents and community.
Yeah, so if you permit me to sort of go off script, I mean, it's always been amazing to me to think that parents entrust their kids to teachers, and then but they're criticized all the time for what they do. It's a very difficult job. So the idea that we're sitting here talking about how can we increase the respect for teachers and what the teaching profession is, it's kind of odd to me.
Yeah,
if I can just piggyback on that, I teach with really incredible people that are very dedicated. No one goes into teaching. Mm-hmm. No one that I personally know goes into teaching thinking we're going to make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. However, there's no reason that a person should go into teaching and have to work two or three jobs to mm-hmm. do what they love.
All right, we're going to go back to the Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think what the problem that creates, a lack of respect for the profession, is causing our best and brightest students to choose other professions. So we've seen a 60% decline since, 10, 15 years ago in the number of students going into pursuing teaching as a career. And that's a problem for us down the road. It needs to be a career that our best and brightest kids can go to college and get out and do great work for the state of Indiana and make a decent living.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to go to the phones. We have Jenny on the line. Jenny?
Hi. I'm a parent here in Bloomington, so I've got three kids in the public schools here, and I have a couple questions for you, sort of a two-part question. One, I'm really concerned about House Bill 1003, because it seems to me that it would just put additional pressure on districts. And I understand it's going to have a disparate kind of impact. I was hoping panels could address that. I mean, we've got districts that are struggling to provide bus service, that are struggling to keep the lights on and maintain their buildings. So the thing is, this bill does not provide more funding. It just sort of ties your hands about how you can spend things. And I worry that we're going to have districts trying to choose, well, do we pay our teachers or do we run the buses? And I don't think any of our schools should be in that position. And then the second thing I was hoping the panelists could address was what I think is the elephant in the room here, which is just the enormous transfer of our public education tax dollars to private entities that's happening through the voucher program and through charter schools, which are privately managed. They're publicly funded, but they're privately managed. And that money has been over $600 million through the voucher program since that got started, and for charters, over $1 billion since 2011. So I was hoping you could address this teacher pay, how teacher pay and how we're supporting our teachers connects with these policies that are siphoning money out of our public schools. And I can take my answer off the air.
All right, Jenny, thanks for the questions. Let's start with our state representative.
Sure. So when House Bill 1003 came on, the very first day in committee, that was our question right there. So this 85-15% sounds, I guess, good to some people. I teach in a district that my high school is 40 years old, so we spend a lot of money on maintenance. We have a lot of needs, and I personally have a real big problem with this 85-15 because there's no new money attached. So you can keep talking about how wonderful it is to give teachers more money, but in the bill, and we asked that in committee, we're like, where's the new money? All you're asking us to do is take the exact same pot of money and redistribute it. And again, in my corporation, I can only speak for mine, it's just really not possible. So yes, that is a big concern of mine. And the it's funny that you mentioned the enormous money to charter schools. So I just left classroom December 21st, and I've been living my own life and teaching, and then I become a representative, and this whole system to me as a public school teacher is a mess. And I just introduced an amendment, as a matter of fact, yesterday, to if you're going to hold public schools accountable for the taxpayer dollar money, you should hold any entity taking state money held accountable as well. So charters, vouchers, because we have no idea where that money is going. That hasn't been put in place, and it was voted down along party lines. So I'm interested to hear the answers from the others on this question as well.
Okay, Rachel?
Yeah, I'll jump in. So to the 1003 question, so it's not a mandate. I'll name that first. Like, it's not mandating that districts do this. It's more of like, this is a goal, this is a target. And for us, I mean, our teachers, when there's mixed reviews, right? So some teachers are to that same exact point, like operations, you need some flexibility to be able to meet the needs there. But then the reality is that it's also, we're creating an opportunity to get more data, get a better sense of where are the dollars going, so that you are able to kind of say, okay, this district, we know that the majority is going into to the classroom. It's not channeling dollars directly, but we do believe that, like, the transparency piece is important. And so it's, let's get that going. And then in addition, let's also continue to push for more dollars appropriated to actual, like, money in teachers' pockets. But we also need to just start to frame the problem, right? Like, we can't know where to go if we don't have the data to be able to, like, identify the direction. And then to the charter question, Teach Plus, we're about individual teacher development. And so we work with charter schools or charter teachers, traditional public school teachers, and really are about, like, how do we get the best teachers into our schools for our students across the board, knowing that parents have those options. We just need to make sure that they have access to high-quality teachers. So I will, to some extent, defer to Dan over here with the question.
Well, just on House Bill 1003, you know, I don't think it has ever been described as the solution to the teacher compensation issue or the solution to our school funding problem. What it does do, though, is provides information and transparency. And, you know, we do have members when they approach their districts at bargaining time question why money is moved out of the education fund into other funds. And it's a frustration. And often maybe it's we just don't know the answer. Why did that happen? This will clarify why those decisions are made and help us have a better understanding of the challenges that schools face. And if it's all about moving money to pay for heating systems that are too old, then we ought to know that. But if it's going to things that are not a priority, we should know that also. And this provides some transparency in that sense. In terms of the charter and voucher school, ISTA has long opposed that as a system in Indiana. I don't think that should surprise anyone. We don't fault any of the teachers. We support all teachers, regardless of where they work. If you care about children and want to improve their lives, we're there with you. But as a system, it has created unintended consequences in Indiana, and some of that really is siphoning money off of a public system to a private system where, frankly, we're spending more money on the administration there as well. So those are some concerns that we have, but that's not really the focus of this legislative session. The focus really is on school funding and teacher compensation, and I'd like to keep the attention there because I think we stand a great opportunity here. We have a great opportunity here to do something positive in the legislature this year.
Well said, Dan.
So one thing that I would love to hear from you all is about rural schools. I mean, in Indiana, funding follows the student, and the conversations we've had that would add more dollars to school funding, the governor's plan to pay off some pension plans and the slight boost in tuition support, not every school would necessarily see the same dollar amount as, you know, schools with more enrollment, things like that. So I guess is putting the money into the K-12 funding formula enough? I guess what other steps should be taken to make sure that, you know, these schools that, you know, are struggling in rural communities, can also support their teachers and increase their compensation?
Wow, that's a big question.
Yeah.
And a real challenge for states like Indiana that have large, you know, rural populations. It's a variety of things. I think increasing the complexity aid would help a lot, not just in rural schools, but in schools that have higher poverty rates in the state. And that's what we see in rural Indiana in particular. So that's important. I think we're going to have to be more creative as a state. Could we share superintendents from district to district? I think we could without necessarily merging districts. So things, creative solutions like that need to be on the table. It has to happen at the community level. We need folks in our communities to have conversations about the future of education in their communities and to come up with solutions that work for those communities. But we've got to do something if we want to sustain our rural system of education in Indiana.
Can I read this comment that came in? It's from Dr. Tony Lux, retired school superintendent. It says, House Bill 1003 puts the school system serving the poorest communities at the greatest disadvantage because they have the highest amount of uncollected property taxes and the lowest chance of passing a referendum like suburban schools can, and therefore this is a false solution as a means to raise teacher salaries. Stop the excuses. Find a way to give a 3% increase as requested by Dr. McCormick. So I just wanted to read that comment. And we have several other questions that have come in. Let me give our phone numbers again, 812-855-0811 or 1-877-285-9348, news@indianapublicmedia.org and at Noon Edition. Does anybody else want to take a crack at Jeannie's question? That was a tough question. It was a good question. Don't see a lot of – nobody's raising their hand.
Right.
Well, here's a question that came in from a person who's on the local school board who says, should school funding be restored to property taxes? Is there any chance that that might happen, Representative Paff?
Not that I've heard of.
Okay. That would be a big shift because that shift had occurred, mm-hmm. what was it, 2008, you said?
Nine. I think, yeah.
Yeah, so, okay, that's not likely to happen. Another question's come in. Will the legislature vote to allow Hoosiers to vote for our Secretary of Education or continue to restrict what we can vote for?
Well, I think that decision has been made by the legislature. I think the question now is when.
This is the Secretary of Education question, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Dr. McCormick?
Yes.
Right. Yeah, that just passed. The House, if I can interrupt, I apologize.
Sure. No problem.
It was supposed to be in 2025, and it was voted through against some wishes of us to move it to 2021. So that has passed the House, and that bill will go over to the Senate, and it'll be up to the Senate to decide what to do with it.
Okay. And one other quick question here from our email feed. Will the legislature allow schools to create their own salary schedules that would offer raises every few years based on merit and experience and longevity? Again, Representative Paff, any chance of that?
So will they allow local control to do their own salary schedules? You know, we had that.
Mm-hmm.
So back when I was teaching at some point, I'm getting older, they took away our steps. We call them steps. So when you got into this profession, you could say, okay, I'm going to start, well, in Vigo County, it's $35,000. And then, you know, as you go through the years, you could see how much you were going to make. And if you got a master's degree, how much you would make. You know, we actually rewarded people for getting more education. And that was all taken away from us in 2010. So I'm a big proponent of that. As far as I know so far, that has not been discussed at all.
So there's a bill in the Senate, Senate Bill 606. I was just reading up on it this morning, and it actually removes a limit that one-third of – and correct me if I'm wrong, if either of you have seen this. It removes a limit that a third of teacher performance or the limit on one-third of teacher salary increases be based on teacher evaluations, student academics, things like that. And so that's being considered in the Senate. So I'm sure we'll see more of that as that bill makes through. If you want to chime in here, Dan.
Yeah, we certainly support that and, you know, believe that the best approach is to allow a full, fair, and free collective bargaining at the local level. We do bargain over pay and benefits in Indiana, but there's a lot of complicated restrictions on how you do that. And there's a lot of unintended consequences that have occurred because of that. I also think, though, as we move forward, we need to find more creative ways. I think looking back at old systems is probably not the direction we want to head. We want to look at newer approaches that do some of the things we talked about earlier. And I think the best way for the state to do that is to provide incentives and support as opposed to mandates and strict requirements on what you can and can't do at the bargaining table.
I want to follow up on that if I could. And Dan, if you could give us a little history lesson, because it was – I don't know what year it was, but basically the General Assembly said, we're going to restrict what you can bargain about. It used to be there were all sorts of work rules and things of that nature, right?
Yeah, in 2011, this was kind of the hot thing in some of the states. I was actually working in Wisconsin at the time when all that was happening there. And so we had a version of that here that put some pretty heavy restrictions. And it's frustrating for teachers who would like to have a greater say in decisions that affect the work in their classroom, not necessarily to control, but to have a say. And we used to be able to bargain over things like, you know, classroom size, resources available to you in the classroom, hours at work. And that was taken away in 2011. And so that's a great frustration, I know, for many teachers here in Indiana.
All right. Any chance of that issue could come up again?
I think it's unlikely. What we're trying to do is to ask legislators from both parties, what can we work on together? What are the things that we do agree on? And to try to move forward on those. And I think we're making some progress in that approach. And so, hopefully in time, people will have a different view of unions and collective bargaining. But right now, we're focused on the things that we all agree on.
All right.
I do want to just say, with the piece of the traditional step and lanes, and I really appreciate Dan's comment about we need to find new innovative solutions, because one of the reasons that I think some folks are just not even considering the teaching profession is that, yes, you have that, traditional ladder, but if I am a high-achieving teacher who's young and I'm maybe, 2 or 3 years in and I'm, working my butt off and I'm making a lot of progress with my kids, I also want to have the opportunity to be able to progress quicker than maybe I would have been able to do in the traditional ladder, right, because of the seniority piece. And so just to Dan's point, just being really creative as we're going forward to how do we incentivize the millennial, kind of mindset of, I want to achieve, I want to do all of these great things while also being considerate of experience and quality.
I wanted to point out.
And just, I was going to chime in as well. As a teacher, I would like both.
Yep.
So I would like a system in place where I have some kind of security. So I have a friend who's been teaching 9 years, and because of a lot of different circumstances, just hit $40,000. Mm-hmm. And she is one of the best teachers that I know, creative, driven, a millennial, all the stuff you just mentioned. And, I mean, my biggest problem with our profession right now is it's not treated as a profession. I'm going to go off a little bit. I have 4 children of my own, and 3 of them are in college right now. And in my house, we pay tuition, and they're responsible for their own room and board. So each of my own children is going to probably leave their state. Excuse me, I have one at Purdue, one at IU, and one at Ball State. They're each going to leave with around $40,000 in debt. And how can I convince my own child to go into a profession I love when the starting salary average in the state is right around $36,000? So
I could not agree
I'm just
with.
Going to throw that out there.
Couldn't agree with that more. I mean, our mid-career teachers have really taken a hit and are suffering, and we need to address that. And certainly our starting pay is important too in terms of drawing people into the profession. But beyond that, we need to do a better job of supporting our new teachers. Oftentimes, they come into situations that they are not, frankly, prepared for from our college prep programs in this state. And so one of the bills that we worked on with Representative Boehning and others is a bill that would provide some resources to establish residency programs for new teachers. And when I'm speaking of residency, you think of it in terms of like a medical doctor. You complete school and you're placed as a resident in a facility to learn the nuances of your work, and the same approach for teachers, so that they would be placed in a school and have at least a year and be highly supported by the institution of the school and the college in that first year, so that they come out of that year fully prepared to deal with the challenges they face in Indiana.
I have one more question that's come in that is really relevant to this conversation. It's from a young man who says he taught college for 3 years as a grad student, and he's trying to get licensed. And he's hearing from numerous people that there's a really low pass rate for licensing tests in Indiana. College of Education students with great GPAs are taking the test 3 or 4 times at around $150, and this is creating serious hurdle for good educators getting the necessary licensing. Is there any discussion in changing those requirements in this legislative session or in the State Department of Education? Anybody know about that issue?
So it has been a real problem here in Indiana, and the DOE is taking some steps to modify it. We'll see if it does what's needed, but we're hopeful that there will be changes in the near future.
And I think our teachers are interested in looking at the universities that we have in our state that are doing the job of preparing our teachers. I think it's worth the question of, like, how do they compare to each other and what's the standard, and ensuring that we are really preparing teachers who are ready to meet the need of the reality of the classroom. So.
Okay. We did have a call who just left a message. A teacher wrote in to say that adding more responsibilities just to be paid fairly isn't right. That's a comment from a teacher. Representative Paff, I want to give you an opportunity to, because you came on late, we've got about 45 seconds to go. If you want to give us, your view on what needs to happen this session on this issue.
Well, my quick view is that we can't just keep talking. Action needs to be taken now. Put some money into teacher salaries. Period. I mean, we're losing people. We can't find people. People aren't going into our profession, and you know, it's not always about money. But we've got to get our profession back in the minds of people that it is actually a profession. It is stressful. We are doing the most important work that I can even think of. I mean, we're training everyone. We're training everyone for their careers they're going to go into. So we just need to collectively all get together and say, you know what, this is important in our state, and we need to put some money behind this.
All right. I want to thank you very much for being here. That was Representative Tanya Paff, state representative from House District 43. She's a Democrat from Terre Haute. Also joining us today, Rachel Hathaway, Indiana Program Manager with Teach Plus, Dan Holub, the Executive Director of the Indiana State Teachers Association. For producer Patrick McGurr and our other help today, engineer Mike Pashkash, Becca Costello, and co-host Jeannie Lindsay, I'm Bob Zaltzberg. Thanks for listening.
Noon Edition is a production of WFIU and the Herald Times. A podcast of this and other WFIU programs is available at WFIU.org.
Production support for Noon Edition comes from Smithville. Fiber internet, streaming TV, home security, and automation in southern Indiana. More information at smithville.com.